And besides, Mozart needs us. You know, if we didn't try to do his music and you didn't come to listen to it, would it be there? Probably not. So that's what we're going to do. Mozart operated in many different areas. He started out, well, he was a concert pianist and toured all over Europe. But in his compositions, his first job was in Austria, in Salzburg, and he was a church musician, and he was not very happy because the archbishop wanted short services. He would have loved Vespers here at Holden because he also liked about 25-minute services, were just plenty, thank you. And it was hard for Mozart to keep himself down to that kind of time. So he didn't stay there for a very long period. But while he was there, one of the pieces, one of the very marvelous pieces he wrote was Vespere Solenis de Confessore, Solemn Vespers of the Confessor. And it consists of psalms and then a Magnificat. And tonight we're going to do one section, Laudate, Psalm 117, from the Mozart Vespers. I do need music.
Thank you.
side of the Archbishop, he wrote beautiful music. He couldn't help himself, right? Later on in his life, of course, he did many other things, symphonies, string quartets, operas, and all of that. But towards the end of his life, he wrote another very lovely short piece with which many of you may be familiar with, and that is the famous Ave Verum, which is really a communion anthem. Hail, true body of our Lord, in the end, be with us now and in the time of our death. And it's very appropriate. So it's very late in his life. Now the viola gets to play. Salzburg had no violas in the church orchestra. No, he didn't. Chamber music, not only for string quartets, but all other combinations of instruments. Looks like it must be a quartet in E-flat major, from what I can tell. Some of you may wonder what those little K's are in front of the numbers. It'll be like Kirchhoff 117 or something like that. Mozart didn't write that down. That's some man cataloged all of his works. His name is Kirchhoff, and that's why the little K's are there, not opuses. Thank you. I should really introduce those people.
Yes.
Some of you have just come to the village and don't know them. So I'll introduce them in order of age, not necessarily importance. And the first violinist is my daughter Miriam, and she is just graduated from college and is a violin performance major. And then number two, who is not playing this quartet, but is sitting over there, if you'll stand up for a minute, is Maria, and she's will be a junior at St. Olaf. Not a music major, but plays violin. And then number three, my son David, will be entering college, St. Olaf, next fall, and plays viola, some violin also. And then Wendy and Carol. Wendy is the violinist.
No.
Sorry, Wendy is the cellist. We don't do that very often. Carol is violinist, and they will be entering high school next year. They're 14. And the violist, who is not my child, but he's good anyway. It's Kirk Anderson. Mozart's wife was a singer. In fact, his first love was a singer, but he didn't get to marry her, and I think he married the sister, who was also a singer, if I'm not mistaken about that. The father was not very happy about it. Because he wanted him to marry into wealth or something, and he married a singer instead, and you know what state most of us are in, that are in the music business. But in fact, the last mass that he wrote was to show off his wife. There's one marvelous place in the Amadeus movie that most people don't talk about, but when his wife goes into Salieri with this manuscript, and you hear this Kyrie in the background and this soprano singing, that was a piece that Mozart wrote for her to show off in Salzburg and bring her back and say, look, you know, at least she's a good singer, nothing else. Okay, so here we are. Cora's going to sing a few, two of the solo pieces by Mozart.
The first one is Sehnsucht nach dem Frühling, and it's a longing for spring. The second one is Ankoi, a love song.
Thank you.
Mozart also wrote for other kinds of solo instruments, like violin, French horn, clarinet, I believe. And so he has a number of concertos, normally would be with, of course, orchestra and solo instrument, but we couldn't quite bring them all up on the boat, so you'll have to do, I'm the orchestra. The concerto in A, the slow movement. Thank you. another very famous piece of string, small ensemble music, and that's the Eine Kleine Nachtmusik, one of the quartets. Now, you heard the whole piece outdoors today, so tonight I think we'll just do the first movement. Do the first movement of it. What did you say was scheduled for 11 o'clock tonight?
Thank you.
Eine kleine Nachtmusik, it's a little bit of night music. And they played it this morning, and then we didn't translate, but not tonight, makes sense. You're not going to get by not participating. That's not a Holden tradition, right? So they're, like most composers from the Middle Ages on, Mozart wrote rounds or canons. And this is, you know, like Row, Row, Row Your Boat, for instance. But he didn't write that one, but he did write another. And if someone will help Corey just move this straight out here, we're going to have you learn one of the canons. Now, sometimes composers wrote canons that came out when you sang them not to have too genteel a flavor. Purcell especially is noted for writing some that when you sing come out with different meanings from what you had expected. But we won't make you do that here at Holden. So here, this one is just, it's an Alleluia, a very beautiful one. You all get to do some Mozart. I'll just give you first pitch. You can do it a cappella, right?
All right, what we're going to do now, we're going to sing this. This is a three-part round. There are three lines, as you can see. And the way it's designed is that one group would sing the whole first line. When the first group begins the second line, the second group begins the first line, and so on. Is that clear? So let's just begin by learning the whole thing together. We'll start right at the top. Here we go. Ready? Okay, and that happens both in the second and the third line. Now, let's divide the group sort of right, straight, smack in the middle here, and make, decide for yourself where you're going to be. This will be group one, and then half of this and half of this will be group two, and half of this will be, then this half and the rest of it will be group three. Is that clear? And I'll tell you, let's sing it three times. By the time we get around to the third time, I think we'll have it all put together. Sing it three times, which means that you're going to end up singing the whole, right? All right, here we go.
Thank you.
after lunch tomorrow, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Thank you, that was beautiful.
We'd like to close the concert with three selections from operas. Now, back in Mozart's day, that is the way you really made it. It was sort of like being Andrew Lloyd Webber. And it's what really made the person famous. If you could make it an opera, that was it. And he worked in many forms. He started out primarily with the Italian serious opera form, and we'll be doing one selection with a chorus from that, Idomeneo. And then he gradually moved into what we call the German Singspiel, and maybe Bruce, when he does his little explanation of his arias, can mention a little bit about this evolving. But Mozart was very interested in writing also in the German language, and not just doing Italian operas for Germans. So you know how you feel about Italian and German operas for when you, if you don't know the languages. It puts you off a little bit. And they had no subtitles in those days either, so. We'll start them, if the chorus will come up and the instrumentalist. We'll be doing the a chorus from Idomeneo. And it's essentially people just thinking about having to travel over the seas and wishing for a calm and driving a little bit. Those are really two flutes. One looks like a violin to you, but it's really a flute. And you see two clarinets right there, not just one, but that's right.
Thank you.
really dressed authentically for the occasion. Now, this is the best I could do formally, but he has a genuine Mozart shirt, t-shirt.
The Marriage of Figaro is a form that was called opera buffa in Italy, which just means comic opera. It happens that the plot to this opera is very complex. There's lots of mistaken identities and cross-dressing and long-lost parents reappearing at just the wrong moment, all kinds of things happening, which I can't tell you even if I had a long time, much less a short time. About the characters involved in this aria. There are two couples, the Count and the Countess, who are married, and the Count's valet and the Countess's serving maid, who are about to be married. Now it happens in the world of this opera that the Count has the right to sleep with anybody he wants first on their wedding night before their new husband sleeps with them. So he wants to sleep with Susanna on her wedding night to Figaro. Everybody knows that he wants to do this, and everybody in the palace is plotting against him to try to trick him out of this. But because he has the right, they can't do anything about it. I mean, legally, they have to trick him. What happens is that Susanna and the Countess decide that they are going to, Susanna is going to send him a note saying that she'll meet him in the garden at night after her wedding. But in the meantime, the Countess will put on Susanna's clothes, and Susanna will put on the Countess's clothes. So the Countess will meet her own husband in the garden, and Susanna will meet her own new husband in the garden. In the scene immediately preceding this aria, Susanna has been assuring the Count that it's all going to work out the way he wants, and that he's going to get Susanna. So he's very, very pleased. She's leaving the stage, and suddenly Figaro comes on, and she says to Figaro, just as she's leaving, "You have won the decision." I should say there's also a little bit of legal, sort of a mock trial going on in here to prove his right to marry. I told you it's a complicated story. Anyhow, there's a little trial going on to prove that Figaro has the right to marry Susanna in the first place. So she says to him as they're leaving the stage, "You've won the decision." In Italian, "Hai già vinta la causa." So the Count hears this from the side, and he suddenly, his whole mood changes, and he says, "Hai già vinta la causa." Then, "You've won the decision." What does that mean? Are they trying to trick me? And then he goes on to sing this rage aria. That's what it's called. It's a form. It's a rage aria. In the 18th century, every opera, comic opera, had to have a rage aria. This is the rage aria for this opera. He first of all talks about, in the recit, that is the less measured part of it, he sings something and the piano plays something and he sings something. He says, "Well, how could they possibly trick me? I've got all the good cards in my hand. And anyhow, even if they did try to do it, I'm the Count." So at that point, he becomes very triumphant. The piano goes into a big boom, boom, and he says, "Boy, are they going to get it for trying to trick me?" And he says something to the effect that if they really thought that a servant was going to laugh at the unhappiness of the master, they've got another thing coming, because I'm going to have the last laugh on them. The one hope that I have is that I'm going to overturn their plan, and that is really going to make me happy. So at the end of it, you hear in the voice part, it goes, "Jubilami fa." It's going to make me jubilant. And the voice goes, and that's musical laughter. Then he ends. Unfortunately, Mozart always did this. He has to do it on a really high note. So, "Hai già vinta la causa." I'm doing it in Italian. I don't know.
"Hai già vinta la causa, cosa sento in qual accia cadea? Parfili, io voglio vita. tal modo punirmi. A piacer mio la sentenza sarà. Ma si pagasse la vecchia prevedente, pagarla in qual maniera? E poi per Antonio che all'incognito Figaro rifuse di dare un nipote a matrimonio. Coltivando l'orgoglio di questo mendicato, sotto Giova un raggiro.
Ah, 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 ah
Mozart wrote in both Italian and in German for opera. This isn't just because he had audiences that spoke different languages. In fact, he wrote for audiences that spoke Czech. I mean, the Marriage of Figaro was premiered in Prague, Czechoslovakia. It's that the languages represented different styles. There's a certain kind of comic opera called opera buffa, about which you see opera buffa, and you can, this is 18th century, you can assume it has certain kinds of stock characters, stock situations, certain kinds of voices, certain use of the chorus, and so forth. And opera composers at that time were expected to be able to write Italian opera, French opera, German opera, and so, well, those are the big three. It happened that Mozart never got the French opera because by the time he got around to it, the French Revolution broke out and they didn't have opera anymore in France. But he did write a German opera. The German opera, the form in which he wrote is called the Singspiel, which means just sing play. It's roughly equivalent to the American music. Spoken dialogue, and then every once in a while the action would stop, they'd sing a song, and then they'd go on to the spoken dialogue. It wasn't a serious, highbrow form at all. It was considered kind of lowbrow. It happens that when somebody like Mozart gets a hold of the lowbrow form, it turns into a highbrow form. No one, there is no Singspiel in the entire literature that at all resembles what Mozart did with the Magic Flute. It's an incredible opera, but the basic form is that it's a rather complicated and a little bit silly story with some bizarre characters and lots of magic and fireworks and things like that happening. Now, there are also two couples in this opera. There are Tamino and Tamina, who are the pure and high and noble who finally get together at the end. He's a tenor. That Mozart always wrote, nice people were tenors. Pamina was a high soprano. And then there are the two lowlife characters, Papageno and Papagena. Now, I don't know where they come from, in what mythology, but anyhow, he's called a bird catcher. But he always, in the productions, he's always dressed in feathers. He has a beak on his head and he has feathers all over him, and he goes around playing little pipes to attract the birds into his net, and then he puts them in the cage. And, well, what does a creature like that do? Who's he going to ever find for a sweetheart? And then, lo and behold, Papagena comes along, who looks just like him, has a beak, has feathers. So there are tests that go on in this opera. Tamino and Pamina pass their test, prove themselves to be the best, and, well, Tamino does, and they live happily ever after. These two are also given a test. He flunks his test because he's a lowlife. And he's supposed to keep silent, which is impossible for him. And it proves to be impossible. He can't keep silent, and so she is taken away from him. So in the scene immediately preceding this, Papageno is talking about suicide. He walks out on the stage carrying a noose, and he's saying, well, since she's gone, I guess I have to kill myself. And then he keeps saying, I'm going to do it right now. And then he says, is there anybody going to stop me? And nobody, so he says, okay, I'll count to three. He goes, eins. And he counts, eins, zwei, drei. No one stops him. And he's a coward. He doesn't really want to kill himself at all. So he's saying, won't something please happen to keep me from killing myself? And these three little spirits, are played by little boys, come down and say, oh, don't do that, because you've been saved. And here she is. So the two of them get together on the stage. They meet. It's very funny if you've seen it in the movie or anything. They come up to each other like, pop, 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 pop. And they meet each other and they go around each other like chickens a little bit. And they start talking about how many children they're going to have. He wants to have Papagenos, that's little boys, puppy boys. She wants to have Papagenas, that's little girls. So you'll hear it, even though it goes by real fast. I'm saying, oh, she's saying, ah. And they have a little argument in the middle of this. We're going to do it in English, because it's not memorized. So this is right when they see each other. Papagena.
Now you will be mine forever.
Papa, 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 papa,